This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show.
I think it's really important that the Cubs take a dispassionate and sober look at what's happening and understand what people have been pointing out around the margins.
While the Cubs have talked a lot about their injuries that they've suffered, the Brewers have had a ton of them. And their system has been good enough that they've been able to replace them and grow other players into meaningful spots and been successful. There was an opportunity here. You wasted the time where the Cardinals weren't going to be a part of this, where they weren't going to be a thorn in your side. And now you're going to have to fight through them too.
It's just Sideshow Bob stepping on rake after rake after rake after rake.
Even the thing that you were trying to do hasn't worked. So when are you going to change? When are you going to open your mind up to the idea that your way isn't the right way?
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Wednesday. The Bernstein and Holmes Show. Leila Rahimi is here with us today as we broadcast live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We have Ray Diaz and Adam Studzinski and Brandon Fryer and Connor O'Donnell and Kevin Lapka, and we have sports, lots of sports to discuss, including but not limited to baseball and football and basketball and all kinds of things. So here we are. And it just seems like part of our morning now every day is coming in and assessing why the Cubs are bad when they were supposed to be good.
I keep thinking about, I mentioned this during transition the other day, I keep going back to this show in January and February and looking over to my left and Leila being like, sure, they can re-sign Cody Bellinger, but they should probably do more because you're just bringing back the same team if you just signed Cody Bellinger. And you were right.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of criticism for it on multiple platforms. If you don't understand why they didn't make X and Y deal, then you should trust Jed. Sir, I trust no man. Especially not to build teams. Like, even guys you could trust, they don't always have the right idea about something. There are variables here, people. But what am I supposed to do about it now? One of those guys was Jordan Montgomery, which I still think is a good choice. I know that's crazy, but for $25 million, it makes sense in the Delta. Anyway, like, what do you do? I heard you guys talk about this in really good segments, I'd say the first 2 days of the week. I feel like other bards who cover the Cubs are also saying the same things we are. So when it comes to the assessment, this doesn't take a rocket surgeon to figure that out.
They counted on a lot of things going well.
They counted on streaky hitters staying streaky, which is really dangerous. Like, you forget about Patrick Wisdom having an outstanding month of April last season. You forget about
Yan
Gomes Stroman being ridiculously good for the first half of last year. You forget about Yan Gomes providing hits. The most staggering number to me, and credit to Steve Greenberg for this after the game on Sunday, which I feel like for whatever reason, the Brewers series are benchmarks, you know, similarly to Bears and Packers. But I think at least with the Cubs and Brewers, it's been competitive. And it's that their numbers with runners in scoring position with two outs, which is when they typically have runners in scoring position, is 181. Period. Paragraph.
The idea that they feel they have to rely on stringing outcomes together, whether there's one out, two outs, zero outs, if this guy does this, so many things have to go right and so many things can go wrong when you're not controlling your offense through power.
The really disturbing part to me, too, is just that everything we saw in September is continuing this season.
Yes. See, that's the part that upsets me, Layla, because whether it's the Cubs or people who are fervent Cubs supporters and they talk about, well, their record this time last year was the same. They won 83 games.
They were a better team last year, too.
But
others got better, though.
There was a great streak of games where the Cubs went crazy.
Go crazy!
And before that, they were bad. And after that, they were bad. And the end result was 83 wins. And you brought back essentially the same team, thinking that they were going to somehow be better. I don't know how you can look at the decisions that were made and go, yeah, that's a good way of operating. And that's why I go back to what Layla was talking about in the winter of, if you thought the Cubs lineup was going to far exceed what they had shown you for most of the season last year, then that's on you. Like, that's on the front office. If you think that you can't, that you don't want more pop in the lineup, that you think that you're going to string outcomes together, that's on you.
There's some issues there too. Like, I'll admit this. If I'm the GM of the Cubs, I'm probably being loyal to Kyle Hendricks to an extent the next season, given what he did. You know, it's a dangerous decision, but one that, if you look at it from a human element, made sense. You know, the Ian Happ contract made sense coming off of the year he had. I understand that. But the concern is not just what you guys aptly said yesterday when I think the discussion was brought up about how the good players are not doing enough good to overbalance the bad ones. But it's also to me that not only is the payroll skewed heavily in that direction, but also, who in the farm system can you look forward to right now where you're saying either you can trade tradable prospects, guys who still have an air of mystery around them or something like it, for somebody you need, or...
Don't bring the prospect humpers out, because they'll crawl out of their holes right now and start firing off missives about everybody who's blocked by the current Major League roster, who is keeping them from ushering in the next great wave.
If you think that the Cubs management has a chance to get better knowing their payroll and knowing what their budget is and what they're up against, and they wouldn't bring those people up right now, knowing the windows that we know, I think that would be an accusation that is misguided.
Let's stay with Bellinger for one second, because you brought that up, and you brought up what you said originally when they re-signed Bellinger, because I'm also mindful of what his agent, Scott Boras, said about the questions about his declining hard hit rate and whether or not that mattered. And remember that Boras said, if you actually look at the at-bats and look at some of the
swing planes
or the actual results, batted ball events, that he was essentially taking one for the team, that his strikeout numbers dropped precipitously, his bat to ball contact numbers were much better, and that was it was a decision on his part to change his profile in that regard. So when asked after the game last night about power and production, this is what he had to say.
Obviously, well aware. but, you know, for me, like, and probably most players, if you start chasing the slug, then, you know, it can go downhill pretty quick. And that's one thing to focus on. So something that I always strive to do is continue staying within myself. Obviously, working towards, you know, the end goal and, you know, just continue sticking to my approach.
The concept of chasing slug is an interesting one, because there are some people who are unapologetic sluggers. That's who they are. It's what they do. Kyle Schwarber is a perfect example of that. That they're going to give you slug.
He's going to give you on base too.
Yeah, they go the old fashioned Adam Dunn three true outcome. And where what Bellinger's saying is, I can do that if you want, but then you got to deal with my strikeouts.
You got to deal with the fact that I'm probably going to hit around 240.
That'd be great. 240. If he gave me 240 with 37 home runs,
but
I'm in.
Here's the thing, though, is he's illustrating a much bigger problem the second you think about it, because you're like, oh no, what can they afford to have happen here? And that's the real issue. You can't have people take risks when you don't have the leeway.
he would be one of the guys who would theoretically give others the leeway.
Correct.
And then everybody's sort of pointing at each other like, maybe you'll hit 25 home runs. Maybe you'll hit 25. Like the, and most importantly, as we pointed out from that Northside Baseball piece, what it does is it protects you from what's currently happening with their bad players. That whoever they are, these interchangeable parts at the bottom of the roster have been so awful, regardless, that they don't have cover.
Credit to Northside Baseball, sure. But we watch the games. And to me, my take of it is that the numbers themselves that are simple dictate to you what's going on. It's just as simple as when I saw the Atlanta Braves lose 1-0 to the White Sox. How do you explain their second place finish right now and their position where they're at in their division when the Phillies are just world beaters? Look at the basic numbers for the team hitting, and they're in the middle. And that's exactly what you see out of the Cubs.
Bellinger is probably the only we know that he's actually done this before, even though it was a long time ago, but probably the only player that could be a six war player.
I need guys to get to 4.3.
But they've got guys that can do that. And Bellinger was one of those guys last year. But that's the thing. They have a couple of good players on their team. They don't have a star.
The Miami Marlins are the worst offensive team in baseball. Their WRC plus is 77 as a team.
But like, just
that's bargain basement. They're below the White Sox.
So Tim Anderson to Cubs.
To me,
confirmed.
Like, team OPS is the real dictator here. Correct.
Well, WRC plus has everything. That's like, power. That's on base. That's everything.
Would you see like the team OPS and that the team OPS for the Sox is 670 or the Cubs is 677. The team OPS for the Sox is 628. But when you see that, that kind of dictates to you what you're looking at. It
does. So 677 is about league average now, right? Like, yeah. aren't we in the, for OPS, aren't we talking like 680, 690?
The problem with OPS is the denominators are different and it's not run environment or park adjusted. So it doesn't take into account all the factors of the current baseball that's being played, which is why, you know, weighted on base usually gives you a little better version of that because it takes out all the noise. And then WRC plus further sharpens it because it's basically a better version of OPS. And right now your Atlanta Braves are exactly in the middle. Your average offensive team at exactly 100 is the Braves.
And here's the
and
Orioles.
And the Cubs are at 94.
Right. And here's the Orioles at like 429 RBI as a team. Yankees at 422. Nobody's surprised by that, right? Like look at the good teams, and that gives you an indication of how bad this is.
To go back to war, the Yankees have a 6-war player. The Orioles have a 6-war player.
Well, and say what you want about the Jason Hayward contract until the cows come home. Here's the bottom line.
Might already be at 6-war.
They had 3 players that year, position players who had a 5-war, and that was the formula to win the World Series, and it was going to cost you. So, like, unfortunately, when you're watching the game last night, it was Seiya Suzuki hitting that home run to cut it to 6-4.
Yeah, Gunnar Henderson is already a 6F4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's outrageous.
Already.
Yeah, and that's worth, each win is worth approximately now, I believe it's, what, $8.2 million
yep.
per win?
How about that? They got one of those.
That's what it costs.
When you got one of those, it makes a hell of a difference.
That's the value that you get because that protects you from the bad bottom third of your roster bottoming out. That protects you from your 20 blown saves or whatever they've had. Well, that when you have the adding up, like Carter Hawkins is fond of saying, a run is a run is a run. A run scored is equal to a run prevented. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, all of these outcomes, that's what war is. It adds up to runs. It's based on runs above average for base running, for offense, for defense.
Well, it sure is adding up for the Cubs.
Exactly. Like this is where last year you could make the argument that it wasn't. This year you can't.
Someone hit me up on Twitter yesterday as I was fighting back the prospect humpers. And made a really good point.
Back, prospect hunters.
The point, and it's a good one, that, and I think that it exemplifies what the Cubs are under this regime. They love to try and win in the margins.
It's what happens when your standards are win the division, and your division is this.
I don't even know if their standard was win the division this year. I don't feel like they put together a team that was to be competitive. It's an easier route. I feel like because of where things stand with the wild card, they think just get in and we can be the Rangers or we could be the Diamondbacks.
No.
But you can't because you don't play the game like the Diamondbacks did last year. And you don't slug like the Rangers did last year.
The Diamondbacks had an outstanding diversified lineup where, number one, you knew who the leadoff batter was every day. And they were able to not... Their defensive run save metrics in the outfield, by the way, were outrageous.
Yeah. And they got after you. And they made it hard on you. And this is not what we're seeing with the Cubs. Speaking of which, let's go over to the defensive side. And let's talk about the pitching and some of the problems. And we saw some of it play out again with Hayden Wesneski. We'll discuss that next. Bernstein, Holmes, Rahimi here on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score.
Score. Grounded out to third in his first at-bat in the first. The pitch is drilled deep left center field. This could go. It's gone. Trey Turner makes it 3-0 Phillies here in the third. A solo shot to left center.
That was Zach Zabin on the call last night here on The Score. He sounded really good. I got to listen to several innings while driving around last night.
And Zach's fantastic.
Zach,
man,
does a really, really good job. Tonight, the Cubs-Phillies series continues from Wrigley Field. Pregame coverage starts at 6:30. First pitch, 7:05 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Hayden Wesneski is a tantalizing collection of traits. But he's not a terrific pitcher at this point. And I'd say throw the slider every time. I know that's an exaggeration. That's hyperbole. But throw it every time. It's a hard pitch to hit. And his fastball is not. So we'll see. We'll see how Pitch Lab figures him out. But I know the big problem had been...
I mean, Pitch Lab has had him for a while and they haven't figured him out. So,
well, wasn't there a rest issue as well?
An arrest or rest?
No,
rest.
A rest issue.
Okay, good. I think I don't know specifically if he's talked about that, but I do know that there was something that had been discerned that his fastball release changed to match it up with where he needed his slider to be released to get the sideways tilt that they wanted. I don't know. He certainly seems to make himself unhappy when he gives up home runs.
Yeah, he gets frustrated. He's got a little Ted Lilly in him. When he
now that was an actual arrest.
Yes, so but not that game.
No,
that was later.
He was not arrested for that. He was arrested for insurance fraud, I think.
Does he get PPP too?
No, wasn't it a boat or RVs? I think
you're right.
I think it was recreational vehicle insurance fraud, if I remember correctly. But
wow. I'm what a stretch.
Well, hey,
get on back there.
You make money where you can make it. But they got no choice right now. Injuries have limited whatever they can do. And if you got to keep starting with Wesneski, I would just keep throwing your best pitch.
I think he's going to do his best given that he's in a role that doesn't suit him. I hate how many times I've said this about members of the entire Cubs pitching staff.
Look, but, I think...
I mean, Javier Assad, that's a blow.
I think it's fair to wonder about what the effect is on human beings when they are pushed out of routine. Now, when we had Carter on, he was pretty clear and distinct that he feels like a pitcher is a pitcher is a pitcher, just like a run is a run is a run. You're either a high leverage pitcher or you're not.
You asked him specifically about that to try to pin that down.
And that's the conclusion that he came to. I'm not surprised by it. There are a lot of people in baseball that feel that way. I just think that anecdotally, there's enough evidence for me to at least think about it and go, these are not just statistics, they're people. So is there more pressure when a person is a closer? Do people feel more pressure, even though there isn't more pressure when someone's hitting leadoff or hitting four? What are the impacts of that? And are you doing your best to help make those people feel better about those roles that they're in that might be uncomfortable to say, no, like you can do this because you're really good at blank. So that should translate no matter where it is in the game.
The best example is John Lester was promised a clean inning in the World Series if he was going to have to pitch in relief. Like, that's the most glaring example we can give you of what you know about a person versus what they prefer and what the outcome is going to be. And when they're the variable, then that's what matters. Like, when they're the person who's dealing with it, it's like, it's the equivalent to me of driving a car you know does a certain thing, but then you decide you're taking a tire off. Like, that, it's that much when somebody tells you, especially somebody they don't owe anything to, about what they would rather do.
So first, let's hear from Hayden Wisniewski after the game talking about his command.
I felt pretty good. Stuff was coming out good. Slider didn't have command early of it, and a few pitches and a lot of walks really ruined the day.
All right, so those are his thoughts. These are the thoughts of Zach, the aforementioned, and Ron Coomer on the score talking about Wisniewski's struggles.
The home run ball was an issue for Wisniewski last time out against San Francisco. Gave up just two hits, both of them home runs. The 1-0, swing and a miss. Now the slider, 1-1 the count. Back-to-back home runs in the second inning by Michael Conforto and David Villar in San Francisco. Wisniewski settled down after that point, but that was enough damage. The 1-1 is low, so 2-1 the count. Wisniewski said, and he admitted this after the game the next day, that in the bullpen, as he was working on his sweeper, his slider, he was having issues in the pen prior to the game. Bounced it 7 times in a row. The 2-1. Swing and a miss. So 2 balls and 2 strikes, the count. I guess sometimes those bullpen sessions are overrated. Sometimes they're not.
There comes a time where, and that is the predominant pitch that he throws. So when you're having issues commanding it, it's unsettling when you take the mound.
Bohm lunges at a sweeper out of the zone. Strike 3. 1 away.
I would think for a pitcher, and I never pitched in the big leagues. I stopped pitching basically when I left high school. But if you're pitching and you don't have command of your number one pitch coming out of the bullpen to start a big league game, you're trying to find it then in game, and you're trying to throw it for a strike, and you're not cutting it loose, and it ends up in the middle of the plate, and good big league hitters know what to do with that pitch.
There's another aspect to it, too. He's right on all counts, obviously. If you know that that's your bread and butter pitch and you don't have it, you're in for a difficult night. What I'm wondering, too, is with the release of Yan Gomes, and I've not looked at catcher ERA, which is something I know that the Cubs have looked at. It's also a veteran catcher's job. It is, and Lawrence, you know this, because sometimes you've got to be a caddy at that point.
Psychologist.
You've got to be a caddy. You got to say, okay, all right, what am I working with? What do we have? How can we work together to keep the ball off the barrel? Miss some bats, get some outs. And I know that they couldn't keep Gomes. But Amaya, as much as they respect him and like him and all that, he's very young. He's in the grand scheme of things, he's really inexperienced.
Yeah, but I feel like if Kyle Hendricks is giving him the seal of approval.
But Kyle's calling his own pitches.
No, he's not.
He has been.
He had been, and since he has had struggles, it's been Amaya that's been telling him to add in more curveballs to it. That's what Kyle has said.
Well, if he's, then I hope that Amaya and Wisniewski are capable of navigating through some of these difficult waters that every pitcher is going to face.
I think that it might just be that Wisniewski doesn't have command of his pitches. I don't want to put that on the catcher. Because when we see him miss and it gets hit a long way, I think that he doesn't have overwhelming velocity. His velocity's fine on his fastball, but it's not overwhelming. And when he can't command the sweeper, and I mean it, the command of it has to be that it looks tantalizing to hit and then disappears. One of the issues with the idea of throw it, is guys will pick up that he doesn't have command of it And they'll just go, they'll spit on it. And it'll be like, oh, okay. Now you're in a 3-0 count. Now you're in a 3-1 count. What are you going to do?
Yeah, or you're fouling it off. Or you're asking your starter to essentially go maybe one time through the order, time and a half. Especially against a team like the Phillies. And I mean, they're not even at full strength.
That's not even the Phillies.
So I was telling you yesterday.
That's not even them.
You get to walk into this series without having to deal with Schwarber, without having to deal with Bryce Harper.
And then Trey Turner hits two home runs.
Right.
That one he hit was ridiculous.
The shortstop would slug.
Yeah. Interesting.
And speed.
And the 312 says that was, you know, reminding that Nito has a reputation as a really good receiver. He might as well not have a bat. That's why he's been a fringe major leaguer, because he can't hit at all. So, you know, you make your trade-offs.
They've resigned themselves to that part of it.
I think the Cubs have maybe done too much of that over the last few years of looking at a catcher and being like, well, what does he do? Well, you know, he's costing us some runs. Does he also produce offensively? Yeah, he does. Let's get rid of him and let's bring in two catchers that are good defenders but don't really hit.
Well, I mean, even the best teams in baseball were okay with their catchers not producing offensively.
And then you cut.
But the difference was they had other players who were producing in the lineup. You know, when it's the Astros trying to figure out what to do with Miguel Montero, it's a different discussion.
Well, that's when it becomes a luxury.
Martin Maldonado. Brain.
When it becomes a luxury to have that guy, that's awesome. Back when you used to carry three.
Yes. But
like, don't you remember the Astros?
Optimize your playoff roster. Yeah.
The Astros were thinking about whether or not to have Martin Maldonado keep starting, and that was the discussion about potentially Wilson Contreras. And obviously, they went with it, and it worked for them, at least in that moment. But that's a good team. This is a different discussion.
We have other stuff that we need to do. More baseball stuff, though, right?
I've got some numbers that'll absolutely blow your mind about you. You want to talk slug? You want to talk about these 6-7 WAR players near the midpoint of a season?
He's only got a 700+ slug. Slug.
I mean, there are, and you talk about walking with baseball gods and what that looks like. You got to look outside of Chicago to see it, but you can see it. Next.
Bernstein and Hope.
Jason Goff is here in studio with us.
We go from Zion Williamson, John Morant, to spinning on finally tailored suits.
Hey, getting yelled at for dancing.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
The Bernstein and Hope Show at its finest.
Yeah, that's what we do, Jay. That's what we're doing over here.
Drill deep to left. There it goes. See ya. 30th home run of the year for Judge. Yankees on the board. It's 7-2.
Starting to remind you of a couple years ago. I mean, I think he's pretty much on the same pace. It's just unbelievable what this guy is doing day in and day out.
The perfect lead-in to this from Amazon Prime.
Michael K., noted deep dish pizza lover, always gets a deep dish when he's in town.
The key is the phrase day in and day out, because that's what baseball is. Football, we have these weekly explosions and our world gets rocked and then we settle down into our routines. But baseball is day in and day out. And obviously, these stats can tend to smooth things out when we see over the course of time what somebody is doing. But to actually sit and watch this day in and day out and think, has anybody ever seen this before? And every once in a while, we go back and we look at, you know, I think we were talking about this before, Studs brought up, you know, Barry Bonds 2004. And you look at the numbers, you're like, hey, that's not possible. It's just these aren't possible. Then you see the fact that he walked 232 times that year. So if you watched baseball, you saw it day in and day out. Babe Ruth in 1927 had two 51-game tears. It's according to the New York Post here. They make you check your work 3 and 4 times when you're done to make sure the numbers are right, because they couldn't be right. Here was the first tear that Ruth went on. May 30th to July 26th. Babe Ruth 20 home runs, 57 RBIs, scored 55 runs. His slash line over that period, 400, 526, 844. That's the proper response. 1.371 OPS. Okay, again, 400, 526, 844.
Stupid.
The second in 1927, August 3rd until September 30th, the next to last day of the season, the day he swatted number 60 off Washington's Tom Zachary and said, 60, count them. Let's see some other son of a bitch do that.
Well,
the numbers were this. 26 homers, 71 driven in, 52 runs. His slash line there was 332, 454, 824, and an OPS of 1.278. Not bad. Aaron Judge's last 51 games prior to last night's loss to the Reds, this is before where Judge had three more hits and another home run.
He's really good.
Last night, by the way. That's May 3rd through Sunday. 51 games. So we're talking about the same chunk. 25 homers, 64 RBIs, scored 53 runs. His slash line, 397, 507, 922. That is an OPS of 1.429.
That's not real.
Which is 58 points better than Babe Ruth hit during the hottest stretch of the most fabled offensive season in baseball history.
I mean, but Studs was right, though, Dan.
04 Bonds.
04 yes. Bonds, 362, 609,
yes.
812.
Yes. 812?
Yes. But, and, obviously.
He had an OPS over 1,000 every month. And all of them were above 1.1 except for one.
Yes.
You know, Pedro said it the best, Pedro Martinez, when he said, I dominated the steroid era. Barry Bonds, too.
Barry Bonds is...
well, but there's a little different context.
Barry no, Bonds is OPS plus.
At that point,
plus.
You're still dominating.
See, I'm glad you're doing this, Lawrence.
His OPS plus in 04 was 263. His OPS plus in 02 was 268.
That's just... These numbers aren't real. They're just
well,
not
there are a
real.
Lot of people who would make that argument.
I'm pointing at you on an airplane and my hair is back. That is not real.
And that's why OPS plus WRC plus are interesting to use here, because then you're talking about relative to the run environment of the time.
That's where like Bonds, 04 Bonds was still in a very obviously run-friendly environment. Still amazing.
But still
amazing.
But look, what was it? Lawrence, you have it in front of you. What was his OPS plus?
263 in 04, 268 in 02.
268. Now.
Good God, so- man.
In Babe Ruth's best year.
Wait, hold on for a second. The Bond stuff is so stupid. You have to keep talking about it. So you mentioned that he had 232 walks that season.
Mm-hmm.
120 of them were intentional.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's it. That's the thing.
They walked him with the bases loaded.
Oh yeah,
intentionally.
Yeah, I remember watching it.
They walked.
We all remember watching it.
Well,
except for the kids.
Some people didn't.
Shout out to y'all.
The highest number of intentional walks he had before that was that 02 season where it was 68. To make the jump from 68, then 61 in 03 to 120. Intentional walks in a season? Jeez. Are
remember,
you
like,
saying?
The newspaper headlines.
So the best WRC plus that Babe Ruth ever had in a season, his best offensive season was 1920. And that was 234. And his slash line that year in 1920 was 376, 533, 849. So he was 2.3 times better than an average hitter in his era of that year. Right now, Aaron Judge in 2024 is at 218.
Jesus.
He's at 218.
Here we are talking about guys with 450 slugs. Just off.
Aaron Judge is...
I mean, we're talking about guys with 390 slug, and that's
like
the problem.
290 on base
percentage. And that's the problem.
Aaron Judge is worth 6.1 wins.
Yeah.
Even looking at it, just take the individual list right now. Even looking at it on MLB.com stats, which is a favorite of mine, as you know. Like, I look at Shohei Ohtani's numbers by themselves, and I'm like, oh, these are pretty ridiculous. Aaron Judge is far and away more significant. Far and away. Like, just the OPS, 1158 aggregate for the season. Shohei Ohtani's at 1,048. Well, if you said somebody was leading the league at 1,048, you'd be like, yeah, that's amazing. That's clearly Shohei Ohtani. Aaron Judge is like, mm-mm, hold my beer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Shohei's doing it in a new league now. And he's fighting with teammates because all of them are good. I don't mean like they're actually fighting. I mean, you look up and down their lineup.
He's battling it out with teammates. You
look up and like, oh, there's Freddie Freeman and there's Will Smith and there's Teoscar Hernandez and probably the best all-around players not there. And they're still doing what they do because they have guys that can be six WAR players.
On July 3rd, Aaron Judge has already accrued in those 6.1 wins above replacement a dollar value of $48.8 million. Wins cost money.
So does Slug. Let's talk a little football with Mike Florio. He's going to join us, and we'll have plenty of things to discuss with him about the dark period of the NFL. And folks getting in training camp, meaning the Bears, soon. Next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Jason Goff is here in studio with us.
We go from Zion Williamson, John Morant, to spinning on finally tailored suits.
Hey, getting yelled at for dancing.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
The Bernstein and Holmes Show at its finest.
Yeah, that's what we do, Jay. That's what we're doing over here.
Drill deep to left. There it goes. See ya. 30th home run of the year for Judge. Yankees on the board. It's 7-2.
Starting to remind you of a couple years ago. I think he's pretty much on the same pace. It's just unbelievable what this guy is doing day in and day out.
The perfect lead-in to this from Amazon Prime.
Michael Kay, noted deep dish pizza lover, always gets a deep dish when he's in town.
The key is the phrase day in and day out, because that's what baseball is. Football, we have these weekly explosions and our world gets rocked and then we settle down into our routines. But baseball is day in and day out. And obviously, these stats can tend to smooth things out when we see over the course of time what somebody is doing. But to actually sit and watch this day in and day out and think, has anybody ever seen this before? And every once in a while, we go back and we look at, I think we were talking about this before, Studs brought up, Barry Bonds 2004, and you look at the numbers, you're like, hey, that's not possible. It's just, these aren't possible. Then you see the fact that he walked 232 times that year. So if you watched baseball, you saw it day in and day out. Babe Ruth in 1927 had two 51-game tears. It's according to the New York Post here. They make you check your work 3 and 4 times when you're done to make sure the numbers are right, because they couldn't be right. Here was the first tear that Ruth went on. May 30th to July 26th. Babe Ruth, 20 home runs, 57 RBIs, scored 55 runs. His slash line over that period, 400, 526, 844. That's the proper response. 1.371 OPS. Okay, again, 400, 526, 844. Stupid. The second in 1927, August 3rd until September 30th, the next to last day of the season, the day he swatted number 60 off Washington's Tom Zachary and said, 60, count them. Let's see some other son of a bitch do that.
Well,
the numbers were this. 26 homers, 71 driven in, 52 runs. His slash line there was 332, 454, 824, and an OPS of 1.278. Not bad. Aaron Judge's last 51 games prior to last night's loss to the Reds, this is before where Judge had three more hits and another home run.
He's really good.
Last night, by the way. That's May 3rd. Through Sunday, 51 games. So we're talking about the same chunk. 25 homers, 64 RBIs, scored 53 runs. His slash line, 397, 507, 922. That is an OPS of 1.429.
That's not real.
Which is 58 points better than Babe Ruth hit during the hottest stretch of the most fabled offensive season in baseball history.
I mean, but Studs was right, though, Dan.
04 Bonds.
04 yes. Bonds, 362, 609,
yes.
812.
Yes. 812?
Yes, but and, obviously.
He had an OPS over 1,000 every month. And all of them were above 1.1 except for one.
Yes.
You know, Pedro said it the best, Pedro Martinez, when he said, I dominated the steroid era. Barry Bonds, too.
Barry Bonds is...
but there's a little different context.
Barry Bonds is OPS
plus. At that point,
plus.
You're still dominating.
See, I'm glad you're doing this, Lawrence.
His OPS plus in 04 was 263. His OPS plus in 02 was 268.
That's just... These numbers aren't real. They're just not real.
Well, there are a lot of people who would make that argument.
I'm pointing at you on an airplane and my hair is back. That is not real.
And that's why OPS plus WRC plus are interesting to use here, because then you're talking about relative to the run environment of the time.
That's where like Bonds, 04 Bonds was still in a very obviously run-friendly environment. Still amazing.
Still
amazing.
But look, what was it? Lawrence, you have it in front of you. What was his OPS plus?
263 in 04, 268 in 02.
268. Now.
Good God, man.
In Babe Ruth's best year.
Wait, hold on for a second. The Bond stuff is so stupid. You have to keep talking about it. So you mentioned that he had 232 walks that season.
Mm-hmm.
120 of them were intentional.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's it. That's the thing.
They walked him with the bases loaded.
Oh yeah,
intentionally.
Yeah, I remember watching it.
We all remember
watching it.
Well,
except for the kids.
Some people didn't.
Shout out to y'all.
The highest number of intentional walks he had before that was that 02 season where it was 68. To make the jump from 68, then 61 in 03 to 120. Intentional walks in a season? Jeez.
The best WRC plus that Babe Ruth ever had in a season, his best offensive season was 1920. And that was 234. And his slash line that year in 1920 was 376, 533, 849. So he was 2.3 times better than an average hitter in his era of that year. Right now, Aaron Judge in 2024 is at 218.
Jesus.
He's at 218.
Here we are talking about guys with 450 slugs. Just off.
Aaron Judge is...
I mean, we're talking about guys with 390 slug, and that's
like
the problem.
290 on base
percentage. And that's the problem.
Aaron Judge is worth 6.1 wins.
Yeah.
Even looking at it, just take the individual list right now. Even looking at it on MLB.com stats, which is a favorite of mine, as you know. Like, I look at Shohei Ohtani's numbers by themselves, and I'm like, oh, these are pretty ridiculous. Aaron Judge is far and away more significant. Far and away. Like, just the OPS, 1158 aggregate for the season. Shohei Ohtani's at 1,048. Well, if you said somebody was leading the league at 1,048, you'd be like, yeah, that's amazing. That's clearly Shohei Ohtani. Aaron Judge is like, mm-mm. Hold my beer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Shohei's doing it in a new league now. And he's fighting with teammates because all of them are good. I don't mean like they're actually fighting. I mean, you look up
he's
and down their
battling
lineup.
Battling it out with teammates. You
look up and like, oh, there's Freddie Freeman and there's Will Smith and there's Teoscar Hernandez and probably the best all-around players not there. And they're still doing what they do because they have guys that can be six WAR players.
On July 3rd, Aaron Judge has already accrued in those 6.1 wins above replacement a dollar value of $48.8 million. Wins cost money.
So does slug. Let's talk a little football with Mike Florio. He's going to join us, and we'll have plenty of things to discuss with him about the dark period of the NFL and folks getting in training camp, meaning the Bears, soon. Next on The Score.